So now let's go outside of 2 years, because I said that we have this adverse presumption where we have to clearly establish that there was not a sale. If you are outside of a two-year period, that presumption flips, and now you have a presumption that it's not a disguised sale, and the government bears the burden of proof that they have to clearly establish that under facts and circumstances that you had a disguised sale. So here we're changing the facts and suggesting that the distribution of the cash out occurs more than 2 years after the contribution of property into a partnership. A is presumed not to have sold the property. That sounds pretty good. Can we take that to the bank and just wait 2 years and distribute? Well, not so fast. The reality is that when you read the regulations under 707, the examples that they have where distributions are made outside of 2 years, they actually conclude in those examples that it's still a disguised sale, that the distribution out would not have been made but for the contribution of the property in, and therefore it's a disguised sale of the property. Obviously, the wording in an example can suggest the result, but what I would say is it's critical when you have a distribution out of a partnership, even after 2 years in this hypothetical, that distribution, that cash, and the asset that went in on the front end be subject to entrepreneurial risk of the business. And what do I mean? In other words, if on day one A contributes property into a partnership and agrees with B, we're going to take $200 of your cash and we're going to put it in a secure bank CD, let's say, and 2 years and a day from now, you're going to distribute that $200 out to me, irrespective of how the business is doing with that asset that I contributed in, then that's a pretty bad set of facts, and I think the government could clearly establish and meet its burden of proof that, in fact, there's a disguised sale. Compare that to a situation where A contributes the property in or a business into a partnership with B. B uses the cash in the business, and the parties negotiate, even on the front end, and agree, you know, more than 2 years from now, depending on what the cash flows of the business are, and assuming that we've met certain debt coverage ratios and that we're generating sufficient revenue in the business, A gets a distribution, a priority distribution out of cash. Now, that starts to move the needle and look better from the taxpayer's perspective vis-a-vis the government, because you are subjecting your assets and the cash to the entrepreneurial risk of the business. That distribution out to you is not certain to occur. It's only going to occur if, in fact, the business is generating sufficient revenue and meeting the other thresholds that you've put in place. So it really does become a matter of layering on factors that will establish the entrepreneurial risk, that the distribution is actually subject to entrepreneurial risk. What I've seen in other transactions is sort of having certain specific performance hurdles that have to be met before the distribution can occur. All right, so we'll skip this slide just to keep going here. Now, not all distributions out of a partnership within 2 years are going to give rise to disguised sale treatment. Otherwise, how could we ever form partnerships on the front end and operate and have people really actually want to use partnerships? There are exceptions to the disguised sale rules, and there are four exceptions in the regulations where if you have these types of distributions, you're not going to be necessarily subject to disguised sale treatment. The first three here are presumptions. So the government, obviously the presumption's in your favor, but the government can clearly, if they can clearly establish that a sale occurred, they can overcome that presumption. The fourth one here is a per se rule. So if you satisfy the fourth one, you're not treated as entering into a disguised sale. So the first one is distributions of operating cash flow, right? We formed a partnership, we're running a business. So to the extent that you have generated operating cash flow, you can distribute the operating cash flow out to the partners. Reasonable preferred returns on capital. Now, this is somewhere where I think that the regulations are not keeping up with, frankly, the market. But the reasonable preferred return on capital allows you to agree to distribute 150% of AFR in a preferred return to a partner. Obviously, AFR has been miserably low for the last year. So I think we're talking about maybe 3 to 5% on a reasonable preferred return. And I don't really see deals where parties are agreeing to that low a preferred return. Typically, it's significantly higher. So what do you do if you agree to a higher preferred return in a deal where somebody's putting in an asset and wants a higher yield than that as far as its share of the deal? You can enter into a higher preferred return. Remember that it's really just a presumption, and you have to be able to clearly establish. So the burden of proof is there, and you have to just be able to clearly establish that the preferred return is reasonable, notwithstanding the fact that it's not meeting the safe harbor. You are subject to disclosure. However, whether or not there's a penalty for disclosure is not entirely clear here. Reasonable guaranteed payments, same thing there, 150% of AFR. And then finally, reimbursement of preformation expenditures. So reimbursement of preformation expenditures is a very handy exception to the disguised sale rules, and one that comes into play quite frequently in transactions, where if you had an expenditure that was incurred by the partner during the two-year period preceding the transfer by the partner to the partnership, and it was incurred for capital expenditures or for organization and syndication costs under 709, if it was a cap expenditure or a 709 expenditure, then you can receive a reimbursement of that expenditure subject to certain limitations. And the limitation is the capital expenditure that's reimbursed can't exceed 20% of the fair market value of the property at the time of contribution. That 20% limit doesn't apply if the fair market value of the property doesn't exceed basis by more than 120%. So subject to appreciation in the asset that's going in, you may or may not be subject to that limitation. And if you're not, you can receive a much higher reimbursement than 20% and not be subject to disguised sale treatment. Now, the IRS in 2016 issued some regs to